Now, this is my job, I will not quit it. Pull me out the depths when I thought that I was finished. Yeah, I question.
Hey, what's going on, everyone? This is Anthony Alvarado from Rise and Grind Recovery Radio, and this is the last episode of the year. I know we just started a couple months ago. Over the last 9 weeks, we've had some unbelievable speakers, stories, leaders, advocates. We even had individuals that are in office. And really, this show has been able to create a situation where we can not share our stories, but we also can reach out to those that are in need, to those that we know are struggling with the disease of addiction. Ultimately, we're looking at helping to create advocates all throughout our community, here locally in the Green Bay area and beyond, across the state of Wisconsin, throughout the Midwest, and throughout the nation. Our country is, unfortunately, facing some challenging times. And the challenges are on every level. We specifically are focusing on mental illness and addiction, specifically focusing on helping communities to create support for individuals that are in or seeking recovery from all things. Look, guys, we all struggle with things in our day-to-day lives, whether it's stress or anxiety or you name it. And that's what this effort is here, is to support those individuals that struggle and in some senses support everybody. This show, this week, this month has been sponsored by a local Nina family who has a loved one in recovery, fresh new in recovery too. Just several weeks ago, this person decided to change their life forever, and in part that is changing their family forever. It is beautiful to see people in recovery, and this family wants to continue to support those that are looking for the same pathway or need to find the same path. So they decided to sponsor our show, Rise and Grind Recovery Radio, which, by the way, I wanted to put out there, this is going to be available on iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube. We also have it via our blog and our news feed. Also at WTAQ.com. We even are on the AM FM radio station 97.5 every single Sunday at 11:30 a.m. Typically every Sunday of the month. We're soon going to be on the Sober Nation Network and also Spotify. Again, thank you everyone for all the support. We could not have done this without you. Your efforts, your support is helping individuals in our community. And I know deep down in my heart, it is helping to save lives. Thank you so much. This week's episode and interview with the Roselle family not only has been extremely important to me, but I think it will be extremely important to the community. Unfortunately, they recently lost their son, Zach, to a heroin overdose back in October. And they were able to join me in the studio and share his story and give a voice to their son in hopes that it helps somebody else out there that is struggling today, or even encourages and empowers families that are going through the same thing their family has. Please take a moment and keep them in your thoughts. Keep the Roselle family in your kindness thoughts. And even if you don't get a chance to reach out to them directly, support them. This is a time that they need it, and so do many other families in our community. Thank you so much for listening to this interview.
Looking to bring a positive message to your next event? Contact Air and Allies. Air and Allies specializes in bringing entertainment to recovery events, daytime music events, and family-friendly community events. Air and Allies also specializes in bringing artists who bring a positive message to reinforce a better lifestyle to events like Mile of Music. Air and Allies can also help you plan and organize your event to make it successful. To learn more about making your event successful and feature a positive message, email Air and Allies at airandallies@gmail.com or look for the link on this podcast.
Are you looking to prevent drug use throughout your community? Rise Together is a national movement that is helping to educate and spread awareness on mental health and addiction. After traveling 100,000 miles and speaking to over 120,000 young people in just 3 years, they currently have one of the best school speaking programs in the world. They are now available for school seminars, event speaking, motivational workshops, public panels, and even corporate trainings. Contact them now by visiting www.weallrisetogether.org.
Hey, what's up, everyone? This is Anthony Alvarado from Rise and Grind Recovery Radio, and we are in the studio today making an effort to change our community. This is the last episode of the year, and I can't thank each and every one of you out there for supporting our efforts here today. And over the last several weeks, the last 9 weeks, we've been able to bring into the studio stories of recovery. We've been able to bring in stories of triumph, of redemption, of advocacy, of leadership on a national and a localized level. We have had the ability to be graced and honored with the presence of U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin, other national advocates like Ryan Hampton, all including Michael King from Facing Addiction, Generation Found, really looking at people that are on the forefront of the recovery movement. And I sit back today and I am in the studio with a family that has recently lost one of their closest loved ones. And before we get into this story, I just want to set the table, if you will. I am a person in long-term recovery, and one of my deepest rooted efforts to advocacy is to create a community where my children can grow up and be safe and be taken care of. And regardless of what they struggle with, that they don't stay silent, that they can reach out for help, that they can be supported, whether they struggle with day-to-day struggles, as we all do, or if my children just so happen to struggle with the disease of addiction like I have, or have a mental illness like I do, that they reach out for help and they actually receive it. My biggest fear is to lose a child. And today I'm sitting in front of two fine individuals that unfortunately have lost their child. Today we have in the studio Betsy Roselle, stepmother to Zach, who was recently lost to the disease of addiction. We also have his sister and also his father, Ben. And I'm going to let them introduce themselves. But for everyone that's listening out there, I truly believe the power of someone's story, to be able to give a voice to the voiceless, the courage that you guys show is somewhat impossible for me to understand. I truly believe that individuals like yourselves will help to change the world that we live in today. And that a family out there somewhere is listening today and it's going to bring hope back into their life. And with that being said, it could help save a life. So with all the respect, I'm going to introduce you guys to the Roselle family, and why don't you kick it off?
Thanks for having us here, Anthony. I'm Betsy Roselle, Zach's stepmom. Was blessed to be his stepmom for 20 years. Ben and I were married for 20 years just a few weeks ago. I wish we could be here talking about recovery today, but sadly, because we can't talk about his recovery, we can, like you said, at least bring a message of hope. And we just feel really strongly that because we've been comforted by so many other people, and God has provided comfort to us, that we need to then try to share that comfort with others, and that hope that there are people like you and like the group Rise Together who are really working and trying to make a difference on, especially removing the stigma of addiction and helping people to talk about it just like they would any other disease.
Absolutely. Thank you for being here. And Ben?
Hi, Ben. See, I think a lot of the reason that we are here is just because of the way that Zach's obituary was written and how open and honest it was. And we did that primarily because we did want to help other people, but also because at that time, I mean, I felt no shame because I realized that his addiction, it's like a disease. It should be treated like as if, you know, it's cancer, You know, and it is so prominent right now. I mean, there's like an epidemic of heroin overdoses. And I'm not even sure what the statistics are, but just reading the paper and being at some funerals, and just because of the way we shared his story in his obituary, I've been approached by other parents and talked to by other parents of children that have been lost to the same addiction. And you realize how big it is and how often it occurs. It's such a common thing, but people are so ashamed to talk about it. Because with this addiction, especially the heroin addiction, I think people, or the people who are addicted, just to keep using, you know, do some things that they're not really proud of, such as pawning all their possessions and stealing to support their habit. And I think this is pretty common with the heroin addiction. But I think that, you know, it's just part of the symptom of it all. And I think if you can recognize that, you can realize that maybe your kids have the addiction. Mm-hmm. You know, I think with this type of addiction and any addiction, so many of us are in denial. And we tend to want to always think that it isn't as serious as it is and that it's under control. You know, and I think that, you know, I felt part of that. I mean, that I was in denial. Yeah. And other people who love Zach, such as his cousins and other family members, you know, felt that I wasn't doing enough to get him back into treatment. Yeah. Now, Zachary had gone through treatment, and 2 years earlier, he had a stroke, and he came honest to us after that he had used heroin. And although, you know, the hospital, they couldn't really determine that it was heroin that caused his stroke. I mean, I believe it probably was.
Yeah.
You know, and because of that, he struggled. He struggled with the loss of some things physically. And I think even mentally, because of his stroke, he never totally recovered from that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, through his treatment, I mean, when he did go to treatment and did come out after his stroke, he was a changed person. He had some really good months.
Yeah.
And they were wonderful. And even in his addiction, when he was using, our family is very tight. We vacationed together. We spent lots of time together.
Yeah.
I mean,
and I couldn't agree. I was actually, you know, I know Bree, and we've met before, and I've, you know, seen some of the Facebook posts recently, and even some of the photos that I looked at that was most recent. Great. Wonderful, beautiful family, smiles. I saw Zach back there and putting up the smile, too, and just even the words of appreciation that have been posted towards Zach, and, you know, memories, and really sharing those memories and sharing those moments of happiness, right? I think it is amazing to see somebody in recovery, and you got a chance to see part of that, right?
And he did, you know, he did so well with it. You know, he was so fearful of going into it, but once he was there, he really opened up. And we had seen a new Zach that we hadn't seen for some time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think, you know, he was less, he always struggled with anxiety. And I think this is all part of why he did use drugs. I mean, he struggled with anxiety most of his life. He was held up in school. When he was in first grade, we held him back a grade. He always had learning disabilities. He also, you know, struggled when he went to high school because he was still struggling with learning disabilities, and had special teachers who were wonderful teachers and did a wonderful job with him. But he was bullied sometimes because of that, I think. And I think that affected him somewhat.
Yeah.
And but still, he was happy. Mm-hmm. He was happy. And, you know, I think, too, with him, he started out probably abusing prescription drugs, like a lot of people who do finally end up using heroin, that, you know, it starts with Vicodin or maybe Oxycontin or just abusing those. And then, you know, it made him feel good when he did these drugs,
yeah,
because then he could step out of himself and not be so shy. And he, you know, I think that it empowered him when he did drugs. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, a lot of his problems started long before he even used drugs.
Yeah.
So, and I think that is true with, you know, a lot of addicts.
Absolutely. I mean,
and it can be, you know, you can be an addict and not really be addicted to drugs. I mean, you can have other things that you can be addicted to, such as exercise, food, or you know, there's
or
so many
or,
other
or gambling or whatever the case may be. So we have many addictions that we can struggle with. And I think a reality of it is that we all struggle with something, you know, and how we cope. Mm-hmm. That is part of the conversation that we'll get into today. And I just want to just pause for a second and just thank you, like man to man, father to father, the strength and the resilience and the courage and your ability to be brave in today's interview just floors me. I mean, we're talking a couple months ago that you lost your son, and the way you are able to conversate, not only around his story, but around the understanding of the disease of addiction, it is clear that you are not only a man with a powerful voice, but a compassionate one in that. And I just want to thank you, like father to father.
Well, and I think that for me, I've been in recovery for 25 years.
Congratulations.
And you know, when I first got out of recovery, I mean, I was on fire to help other people. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted to go out there and change the world. With me, it was alcohol.
Yeah.
I mean, I did other drugs. I mean, when I go to AA, I also say I'm an addict because mm-hmm. I would abuse anything. I really didn't like myself, and I did drugs. And I saw so much of Zach. I mean, when I look at Zach, it reminds me of myself.
Yeah.
And I really believe that he could have beaten this addiction, and I thought he was going to. You know, he was on the verge of going back into treatment. He did his assessment, but he had fallen in the love with a girl, and they had been living together, and they had been using together. He had met her in recovery mm-hmm. several years before. And they didn't start dating until after recovery. But, you know, I think it did hurt his recovery because I think that really people coming out of recovery shouldn't be involved for a while. And you try to stay out of relationships because it takes your focus off your recovery.
No, I've been there.
You know, I think sometimes, you know, we change addictions and we do things to feel good. And he was lonely for such a long time. He hadn't dated anybody in a long time. And, you know, when he came out of recovery, he was feeling good. And actually, he had lost a lot of weight when he was recovery, which most people don't. And mm-hmm. he was a little overweight before he went in. And he just, I mean, physically, he looked better.
He looked great.
And healthy. Yeah. And, I mean, he was so open and talked so much more and was so much more social after his recovery. He did his recovery up in Stevens Point at Ministries, and I can't say enough mm-hmm. good things about that.
A great organization.
His girlfriend that, you know, the day he died, actually was using with him that day, and she had gone back to recovery after Zach mm-hmm. had died. She decided to go back in, and she went back to the same place, and We're helping to kind of support her in her recovery, not so much financially, but, you know, because I am in recovery, I'd like to be doing some meetings with her far as, and I've tried to talk her into kind of coming to some of my home groups. And that's
some of the things that I want to discuss as we get a little bit into the show. I definitely want to give some time to talk about how you support your family and also being a person in recovery, what support services you've been able to use in your life to sustain 20 plus years of awesome recovery. I think that is crucial for people to hear. Also want to shift focus over to Bree and just let you also introduce yourself and give a little bit of feedback of why you're here today.
I'm Bree, I'm Zach's stepsister. pretty much echoing what these two just said as far as bringing awareness and trying to take any of the positive that we can out of the situation.
Yep.
Like Ben kind of mentioned, after the obituary was published, there were so many people that would reach out to us and just thank us for being courageous. And honestly, I didn't consider it being courageous when we did it. Like I think my mom said, if he would have died of cancer, we would have said that. Yeah. No problem. So just here to kind of thank everybody for the support they've given us. I remember when Zach got out of when he recovered the first time, he came over to my house, and it was so funny because he, like Ben said, just talked the entire time. He was always pretty quiet, but he was so talkative, and he was explaining to me that it was like he was in sixth grade again because he was having all these new emotions that he hadn't had, that he was numbing with all the drugs. And so if we can even, you know, help one other family to experience that, or an addict to be able to experience that, that's kind of the hope of today, I think.
Because family relationships do suffer, as you know. You know, I think Bree and Zach, they were really close for a long time, and then when he was using, right, it was, you know, it was hard to be around him.
Yeah.
So people do put up walls, sadly. And I remember you sending me a text, Bree, when Zach got out of treatment and you saw him, and I remember you, sending a text saying, "I got my brother back."
And if you guys need to take a break, of course, I know this is really, really difficult to talk about.
Well, I'd even like to, you know, go through the days of events when Zach did overdose. I was at Home Depot in the parking lot just leaving, and close to where he lived. And his girlfriend had called me up and said frantically that he had overdosed and that the paramedics said she had called 911 and that she also gave him Narcan, which is a drug that is a blocker, which the paramedics have, but she also, Zach also had it around the house. And, you know, and I think that with that addiction, a lot of the users actually have Narcan, you know, and they try to use it as a safety net in case somebody ODs that they can quick give them a shot.
Right.
And, you know, something, because he was, he wasn't right with her when he did go unconscious. She didn't know how long he was, but he was without oxygen too long. But when the paramedics came, I showed up right at that time, and they were administering him. They were shocking his heart back into working, and he looked a little gray, you know. And it was very traumatic to be there, but I'm glad I was. And I saw the paramedics get a heartbeat back, and then he ended up into the hospital. We followed them over there, and he looked good after they got his heart going. His color came back and everything, and I was, you know, I'm pretty smart about that type of thing. I mean, the way he looked, I thought that maybe he would be brain dead. I mean, I had that feeling. They didn't make that determination until after he was in ICU and did the CAT scan, and they stabilized him first, and then we ended up finding out that he was brain dead, that he was without oxygen too long. But in such a short period, I mean, within 30 minutes, I had, you know, 25, 30 people there. It's amazing how word gets out so quick, and we had the support of friends, family, coworkers. I called the minister from our church, and he showed up there. And then there, shortly thereafter, we had somebody come from Madison asking if we would donate his organs, which, you know, his mom, who isn't here today because I don't think she's ready to talk.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so raw to her yet. She's really struggling.
I can imagine.
You know, she and I made a decision that we would do that. And it was a hard decision because Zach was kept
alive in order to harvest his organs, and I think it prolonged the whole thing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I knew he was gone already. I think for his mother and his biological sister who came up from Milwaukee, it was even more of a struggle because of the fact that he was there in ICU. You could go up and kiss him. You could hug him. He looked like he was alive, you know. I mean,
better than he looked months.
And really, and I look at it and I, you know, I see God's hand in a lot of it, that they were able to bring him back and that we were able to do that and to give his organs, and that he was healthy. I mean, he really, he had never looked better in the last 10 years, even though he had been using for, you know, some time. I mean, physically, he looked really good. And it was hard for his mom and his sister to accept that he really was gone.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they didn't leave his side for days until they did harvest his organs. And it takes a long time on the other end to batch up blood and do matches and find recipients for his organs. But we did want something good to, you know, come out of his death. And, you know, I see God's hand in that. And I see God's hand in that also, because I was in recovery. I mean, I was strong enough to deal with it. I don't feel like I have to use to deal with it.
Yeah. Good for you.
You know,
good
even you. Months before, I had started going back to AA meetings. Mm-hmm. I hadn't gone for a few years. I tried to use you know, our Bible studies and, you know, our support from the church, you know, and quit going to meetings. But, you know, and when I started struggling with his addiction, I started going back to meetings, and I started feeling good about it. But I think it gave me the strength to deal with it that day. I mean, I was very strong and level-headed during the whole thing. And for some reason, I just felt God was there for every moment. He put people in the hospital that didn't even know Zach was there. People from my support groups from AA just happened to be there the day that, within hours. And, you know, there were so many coincidences that I think were more God sequences. Yes. I mean, people that hugged me and comforted me. And even Betsy and I don't belong to the same church, but we do some of the same Bible studies.
Yeah.
And I just want to thank her minister for being there when I needed him. And he came and talked to our whole family, and it was very comforting. And we cried our eyes out, we still do. It's like we still, you know, there's moments that just bring back memories, and you just, you know, you have this hole in you. And it's not that I'm not angry, I'm not resentful, I don't know what it is, but it's just the loss that you feel. I can accept that he's gone. I can accept that it was really his addiction that took him. Mm-hmm. You know, but I also think it was God that took him, so he didn't have to deal with his addiction. He really wanted to quit. He really did. Mm-hmm. And he didn't know how to deal with everything, the financial problems he was having. He was making grounds on paying back his debts, and you know, but he struggled like that. When it came payday, he'd lay out all his bills and say, well, I can pay this on this one, this on that one. And you know, it was a struggle financially because of the addiction. But then he would stay clean for some time and then try to straighten things out, and then he would go back to using.
Yeah. I don't think people who aren't addicted can even begin to understand the power, the draw of trying to chase that high.
No.
I don't get it because I'm not addicted to something like heroin, but I understand it academically that somebody who was so, you know, Zach was really trying to pull it together, but the draw to that high was so strong.
Yeah.
That and you can't talk about it like it's a logical thing. You know, people say, well, why would you do something that you know is going to hurt you? Well, you know, we learn it doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
Just like a cigarette smoker, you know, they know that it could give them cancer, but they are so addicted.
Mm-hmm. Or someone that struggles with diabetes, or you know, somebody that you know, does struggle with addiction. It really is a conversation that, in part, I can say this and understand it as a person in long-term recovery, like I'm not necessarily completely addicted to the substance. I'm addicted to the escape. Mm-hmm. I'm addicted to the escape that is that I'm surrounded with. Like, I can't cope with this, that, or this. Like, even right now, there's things in my life where I want to be like, I don't want to do that anymore. I don't have enough energy to continue to support that struggle in my life. And I have to go to a pastor, go to a mentor, go to a best friend, go to my brothers, go to my mom, my dad, and ask for guidance and support. And sometimes, even with all that connection, we have individuals that aren't able to capture that long-term sustainability and recovery. And unfortunately, we do live in a world, as you referenced before, where many millions of people are facing the disease of addiction. And on top of that, even more so, millions and millions of family members have, unfortunately, a similar story to yours. And that, for anybody, to take a look from the outside, whether you understand addiction or not, if you can understand that, like, addiction, or at least drugs and alcohol, and also the surrounded factors, are in part destroying our American culture, and in part, like, destroying our families. We are at epidemic level. We do have, yes, an estimated 23 million Americans in recovery, but at the same time, we have an estimated 22 million people that are struggling with addiction today. That's 45 million people. Now you take a look at the families that they're from. The sister, the mom, the dad, the grandparents, the brothers, the sisters. I mean, in the last interview, I was talking to Senator Tammy Baldwin, and I was saying that I've met thousands and thousands of students over the last 3 years that have... not only stood up and spoke about the issues that are going on in the community, but have said, I've lost a loved one due to drugs and alcohol. And these people, these individuals, these young people are anywhere from like 8 to 18 years old. And I am brought to tears every single time I'm in front of 200, 300, 400 people that stand up and say, yes, yes, I lost a loved one. Because then I ask them, who? Who did you lose? And it will be like a brother, a sister, a mom, a dad, both parents, an uncle, and the list goes on and on and on. A best friend, all my friends. Like, that's where we're at. Like, truly. So again, I have to just really support you and your efforts today. For what you're doing here, and to even show appreciation and gratitude for the people that have given you support. I think I have to ask, like, all of you, you know, how are you guys doing today? And how are you sticking together at this at this time in your life?
Well, I think even because of Zach's death, I mean, his addiction, you know, kind of, it really affected our family, not just our immediate family, but cousins' family. He was part of a family business, and... you know, it put walls up between us. When he did die, when we did get together shortly thereafter, before the funeral, you know, we sat down and we said, we all talked, and especially I needed to talk and say, you know, there were things said and done because of the addiction that hurt, that were hurtful. You know, everybody was trying to somehow help him, and you know, he felt threatened by that. And there were things said, you know, my two brothers, who I'm in business with, wanted to fire him. And I didn't want him to be fired, you know. And maybe, you know, they were doing an attempt to show tough love. And, you know, we did show tough love in some areas. But, you know, some families choose to separate themselves totally from the person that's addicted, and the people end up homeless. I know people that have done that route, and today, those their loved ones maybe still haven't, you know, found their way to recovery, and they don't even know where they are. Every now and then, maybe they'll get an email, send money, I need food or whatever, and they choose not to, out of tough love. I don't know what the answer is. Yeah. I just know that we loved Zach the best we could.
Yeah, and amen. I don't know. There's not really a right or wrong tough love, right? Because for some people, they know their boundaries have to be not living with the person or not giving them any more money. And I think families struggle because they define tough love differently. Mm-hmm. And you know, if you're struggling right now, anybody who's listening, if you're struggling with how to help a family member, there are support groups out there. You know, there are medical avenues, but sadly, as Zach learned, those medical avenues aren't available immediately. You know, when he was ready, remember when he was ready the first time to finally go into treatment, he found out there was going to be a 2-week wait. Well, guess what? You tell somebody who's addicted, oh yeah, we'll have room for you in 2 weeks. Well, you may not feel ready in 2 weeks. Yeah. So we do have the system does have a challenge in terms of the numbers of beds available, the numbers of counselors available.
Absolutely.
And in Zach's case, he had good insurance, which actually was a hindrance to him because his insurance, well, it wasn't that good because it still cost tens of thousands of dollars that he didn't have, that we were helping him pay with. But how many people have tens of thousands of dollars to throw at a problem like that? So there are a lot of things that, quote, need fixing. And I think it all comes down to looking at addiction as a disease and not just paying lip service to that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just sad to me that everybody tells us how courageous we were to be transparent in the obituary. That made me sad to hear that because that means that they think somehow it took something extra to call this disease out as a disease. Right. And that's not true. Yeah. They wouldn't have called us courageous had we said he died of lung cancer or diabetes.
Absolutely.
So that made me sad and just made me realize. So, if you're feeling like you can't talk about your son or daughter or brother's addiction, don't feel ashamed at all. It's like any other disease. And yes, the choices, there are diseases that have bigger consequences when poor choices are made. I totally understand that. But it's still a disease. And so we don't think of ourselves as brave at all, saying, Zach died.
And this is why.
Of a heroin overdose. And even the word overdose I struggle with, that's kind of a misnomer with heroin because overdose would imply that there's a safe dose. Mm-hmm. You can overdose on Tylenol, right? Yeah. Two is good, 30 is bad.
Right.
With what Zach died of that had fentanyl in it and another synthetic, you could die with just a tiny amount. So the term overdose, I think, is a misnomer. Mm-hmm. People are dying of normal doses of heroin. There is no such thing as a safe dose of heroin.
I think that really, if you do have somebody close that is struggling, the best thing you can do is get them into treatment. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you can get them to go to treatment, it may not take the first time. I think probably 40 to 60 people, who go into treatment end up relapsing, but that doesn't mean they didn't learn anything when they were there. There's setbacks. But this last time I did want Zach to make that decision himself. Mm-hmm. I wanted him to go because he wanted to quit. I think he was fearful. He didn't want to leave his girlfriend because he was in love, and he just didn't want to leave her. I think that was part of, reason he didn't want to go. But I think that treatment, you have to have the professionals try to reprogram, your thought process. So much of addiction, it's all in our head. I mean, it's brain chemistry. I think there are advances being made. And, at some point, there will be a drug that you can take. And there are drugs that they do use right now. I mean, where people are on methadone or whatever. Zach didn't want to go that route. I wish he would have. At this point, I would rather have him be on methadone and alive today. But you can't go back. Once you lose somebody, you can't go back and retrieve that person, which is tough. And I think that for some people who lose family members and addicts to their addiction, they blame themselves. I mean, I didn't feel that way. I felt like, it was addiction that took him, his own addiction. I have family members that thought I should have done more. And I understand their feelings, but you can't, You can't take people and put them in a bubble and protect them.
Yeah.
I mean, even after treatment, they go back out and they do have to make some changes in their lives. And, you know, I think Zach did for a while, and then he fell back into being with some of the people. And the problem with heroin is that a lot of his friends were in treatment maybe five or six times. I mean, it's like they have friends, and then they get out, and they're with those friends, but then some of their other friends who have already relapsed get involved with them again, and they get drawn back into it. And, you know, you can't blame the dealer, per se, for, you know, for his addiction. I wasn't angry because he bought from the dealer who ended up being arrested. But, you know, I don't have any blame, you know, as far as Zach would have probably went somewhere else and bought drugs. But, you know, it has to be fought on all sides. I think, you know, I was really surprised how quick, you know, there was a task force, a drug task force, how many police were involved and how they did pursue it, how they did make an arrest. And, you know, we were open to anything that we could help them to do. Mm-hmm. I mean, it'd be great if you could keep drugs or heroin off the streets. It's impossible.
Yeah.
You know, what is going to change it?
Are
tighter borders going to change it? I don't know. I don't think so.
Well, it can be a part of it, right?
It could be a part of it. It has to be fought at all angles. But I think the real fight, or the real solution is going to be in the medical field. I think at some point there will be something that, not just for heroin, not for crack, for anything, but for all addictions, there may be something that they'll come up with that will... they can pinpoint in the brain exactly, you know, what makes you keep going back? You know, what is that draw? And I think that's where the breakthrough is going to be eventually. I'm hoping that.
I think a lot of what you're saying is right on point, you know, to be honest with you. If you take a look at, okay, so we have a revolution in some senses of conversation that is happening in communities that we've never seen before. What you're doing today is in part unprecedented to some extent. So sharing your son's story so vocally is showing a sign of courage, in part because there are so many people that aren't doing that. Right? And we are not in a situation where we have a culture that completely understands addiction as a disease. Like, we've been saying it for a long time, but we really haven't been addressing it as such. So you really look at, how do you attack this? How do you look at the epidemic? How do you curb that? We know that social stigma is one of the root causes to why this addiction epidemic continues to thrive in our communities. You are right. We could take away all the drugs in the entire nation and we would just figure out ways to make more. You know, an example of that would be meth. And it doesn't really matter what substance it is. We could talk about heroin or prescription drugs. And yes, there are certain ways to address each product, each illicit substance. And there are some unbelievable efforts that are going out to help curb the opioid crisis that we're seeing all across the United States. But again, we have to look at the individual. And each individual is going to be different. Not everybody's the same. What worked for me might not work for you, and vice versa. So what are the recovery support services? How can we plug these people in during their entire lifespan and look at the full continuum of care? So if somebody reaches out as a teenager or younger or older, they are provided with the services that they need, whether it's to address mental health, or address substance use disorder, or address a long-term addiction. And some of that is some of the big priorities, which is helping to develop more access to treatment, for example. It would be unbelievable to live in a world where as soon as somebody asks for help, they're able to get that treatment as soon as they needed it. Mm-hmm. Like with any other public social concern that we have, like a cancer or a diabetes, or something that would be similar. Because whoever struggles with those diseases, which by all means is extremely important to focus on continuing to support those individuals, But wouldn't it be great if a person in recovery or struggling with addiction could walk into the hospital and receive that care? Mm-hmm. And we just don't live in that world today. Mm-hmm. So really addressing it as a disease is one thing, but actually supporting it and developing the research, the support services, the prevention, the treatment, and the wraparound services that these individuals need through their entire life. We have a long ways to go. But where it does start, I truly believe, and deep down in my heart, is if you take a look at any other social movement that has happened, we have people that started to unite and started to advocate and started to share their story more vocally, whether it was in the newspaper or it was in the, you know, on local TV or radio or in their community, at their church, at their support group, with their business associates, with the people that are in their family and outside their family. And then large groups and associations started to rally and influence policymakers to attach more funding to addressing the disease, to doing more research on the disease mm-hmm. or the concern at hand. And that's what's happening within the recovery movement. And I know, like, people in recovery have an unbelievable strong voice, but the families also have been impacted. I'm seeing mothers and fathers unite and siblings unite and start to speak out about the loved ones that they lost. And I truly believe, because if you take a look at history, once mothers start speaking out, that's where you start seeing that paradigm shift. And that's what you're helping to do today. So when you leave here, I just want you to remember, I know you made a comment like, well, we're not really, weren't trying to be courageous, but you are, without even knowing it. And that's giving other people the ability to be empowered with the education that you were able to provide here. Even the conversation that we had amongst each other is a valuable resource to whoever is listening. And I've been traveling to say for the last 3 years, and the way you're able to explain the disease of addiction and what needs to be done and how to get support is right on point with the quote-unquote best of them. And I think that should be a takeaway, because to the families that are out there struggling today, the ones that have recently lost somebody, I know even when we kicked off the show, and even me and you talked about it, like, I kicked off the show in part because my father was in the hospital, and I almost lost my father just a couple months ago during the same time that you lost your son. And I went through really hard times. I bawled. I cried. I got angry. I'm choked up today. And although we talked about my father being in recovery, there still is that feeling that what if he goes back on the community, he isn't able to get the support that he needs mm-hmm. because of his mental health, because of his addiction. And when I lose my father, if I were to, which is very possible, what do I do then? And all these questions start coming up. So just as much as you're helping our audience, you guys have also helped me to understand how to go through these life challenges. And I think what's appropriate is that I really know the importance and value of somebody's personal story. And what I would really like you to do, if you feel comfortable with it, is to share the obituary and share that story. And for all the audience members out there, this might be one of the most difficult things to do. I know I got the opportunity, I'll say, to write my grandmother's obituary and my grandfather's, and I read it in front of the entire family. And it was very, very difficult. So for everyone out there, the reason I want this to be shared is because I want to show you that we should continue to give a voice to their loved ones for the greater good that we're trying to accomplish today.
And I think when Bree drafted this obituary for her brother, she really did it with the heart of saying, I don't want anybody else to feel, you know, if we can prevent somebody else from going through what we're going, and to pay tribute to Zach because he was just a cool, big-hearted guy.
Yeah.
So would you mind reading it, Dolly?
Our precious Zach's story sounds far too common and familiar lately. On October 5th, 2016, Zach died of an accidental heroin overdose. We share his story in the hope that it might save others from the incredible heartache that we are experiencing. Zach was born on April 25th, 1986, and was baptized at Bethany Lutheran in Appleton and confirmed at St. Paul, where his special verse was, "God is our refuge and strength, an ever-present help in trouble," Psalm 46:1. He graduated from Fox Valley Lutheran in 2005 and went on to carry his grandfather and father's legacy at Roselle Construction. His heart was as big as his beard, and his smile and laugh would light up a room. There was never a question where Zach's heart was. He was real. He was kind. He was generous. He loved Eggs Benedict, prime rib, techno music, and glow sticks. He struggled with anxiety. Zach loved spending weekends at the Deer Shack with his family, snorkeling with his dad, and soaking in the beauty of Door County. He took amazing photographs. He was a big movie buff and could rehash the storyline from every movie he ever saw. Family Guy was his guilty pleasure, and he would have rather pierced his own lip than miss the episodes on Sunday nights. Zach had a passion for riding motorcycles, and he was quite the poi ball expert. He was proud of his gun collection, and he loved his little dog, Rue. Zach is survived by his parents, Rhonda and Ben, Betsy Roselle, beloved girlfriend, Rebecca Van Handel, sisters, Star Fechtel and Bree Schmidt, and nephew, Antonio Fechtel. He is survived further by his grandmother, Mui Roselle, and his grandfather, Roland Hartman, uncles, Bard and Nan Roselle, Ned, Kelly Roselle, aunts, Linda Hartman Shook, Brenda Klahesi, Kathy Hartman, Gina and Brad Guyette, and his cousins Hunter, Hannah Roselle, Hope Roselle, and Jake and Josh Guyette, Jenny Klahesi, Heather Meir, Danny Shook, Sadie, Tyler, and Kylie Hartman, numerous stepfamily and countless friends. Zach was preceded in death by his grandparents Harry Roselle and Charlotte Hartman and cousin Michael Fultz. An addict is fighting an uphill battle. As loved ones, we intervene and do what we can to show tough love and help them out of their agony. If you are struggling or know someone who is, please do not wait until it's too late. At Zach's funeral, we were reminded that the Lord asks us to lay down your burdens, lay down your shame. All who are broken, lift up your face. Oh, wanderer, come home. You're not too far. So lay down your heart, lay down your hurt, and come as you are. Very special thanks to the Grand Chute first responders and police and RNs Mary Simo and Brandon Banke at the ICU staff and organ donor team at Appleton Medical Center in Madison, who treated Zach with love, respect, and honor. Do not be silent. The numbers for the Winnebago Crisis Center is 920-233-7707, and the Outagamie Crisis Center is 920-722-7707.
I know that was probably quite difficult, and I want to thank you, you know, for reading Zach's story. And one thing I couldn't help but to notice is that we all found a reason to smile and to laugh. So as difficult as it's been to lose a loved one, your son, Zach, I think what's clear here today is that he was full of life. And although he might have struggled with some things, and although he may not be standing with us today, in spirit, he's with us all. Mm-hmm. And if we could look at the world around us as individuals, kind of how you ended that obituary, where we look at all people with no judgment, and we love them and we care about them and we support them, the power that we could all create for a better future, a better tomorrow, for our next generation, mm-hmm. for our children that are still survived, and continue to move forward. I mean, there isn't any one easy way to address or even have this conversation today. There isn't. But I know somebody out there needs to hear this message. And the strength that you guys have carried into room today and is identified because you've been doing it since this tragic loss. And what I mean by that is it is amazing to see you guys come together. I know there's families out there today that don't have what you guys have. They don't have the support. They don't have the guidance. They don't even know how to go through it. I mean, even Zach's mother seems to be struggling today, and I know if she were ever to listen to this, just know that you are not alone, you know, and that Zach is without struggle today. Mm-hmm. And we can still remember the smiles and the great things about him. Those are the memories that we can hold on to. Those are memories we can continue to talk about. Mm-hmm. Right. Thank you guys so much. I think at this point in the show, I think it's necessary to share with our audience not only how you are supporting each other. You've mentioned some resources. You've mentioned some things that have been helpful in this time of your life. What kind of things would you directly say or have said to somebody that has recently lost or has lost their child or a loved one due to the disease of addiction? What would you tell them?
Well, the obvious one for us is our faith. And I just, we've said time and time again, I don't know how people go through this without faith in God and His promises. And I know not everybody has that. You know, I know a lot of people listening, that's not something that resonates with them. But for us, wouldn't you agree? That's our rock. I mean, God is our rock.
Amen. I think also, I mean, don't isolate yourself and talk about it and reach out. Mm-hmm. People are there to comfort you. God comforted us so that we could comfort others. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt in my mind that going through this without the closeness of our family, the comfort we had from our friends, from, you know, both of our churches, and even other people reaching out and sharing their story because of the obituary that was written has helped me to realize that, you know, we're all struggling. We're all in it together. Mm-hmm. You know, and we're so open to people calling us. I mean, we had calls from somebody who had lost one shortly thereafter to the same, it was the same thing. I mean, it was heroin, it was fentanyl, toxicology showed it. And they reached out to us because we had shared this obituary, and we went to the funeral and we hugged those people and told them that, you know, not, I think for them, they were struggling and trying to blame themselves for their child's death. And you can't do that. You can't carry that burden. And to lay your burdens at the foot of the cross. I mean, I even look at it at some point, you feel some guilt. You feel like you could have done more. And, you know, I pray to God that if there was something I should have done that I didn't do or something that I did that was not right, I mean, I lay that at the foot of the cross and I leave it there. And we have to move forward. And how can we help other people? You know, we have to realize that treatment really, at this point, isn't a cure. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just a start. And we have to support those people, encourage them to continue in their recovery, continue to go to meetings, NA, AA, or wherever they can get their support. I mean, that's the key to keeping it going. I mean, to not going back to where you were. Yeah. You know, for me, alcohol, I'm just one drink away. I realize that I need to still go to my meetings, even though I had skipped them for so many years. Mm-hmm. I feel so much better about where I am once I started going back. Even with the struggles I'm having, I leave with a smile. Every time I leave a meeting, I feel better than when I went in. You know, and it's so weird. The, you know, people that I had met 20 years ago that I did meetings with, a lot of them are still there, which is really neat, and they remember you. And, you know, I've taken up new groups just because of location. And, you know, something, there's a lot of wonderful people there. There's a lot of healthy people. But, you know, really, recovery, it works by sharing experience, strength, and hope. Mm-hmm. And, you know, God works through people. And that's where we find our strength.
Mm-hmm. And there are some great support mm-hmm. groups out there, as you
Absolutely.
Know. There's a group on Facebook called the Red Balloon Group mm-hmm. that Wendy Stewart, right,
yes.
started that.
And that's Wendy. She's awesome.
Yeah,
she's
that's for parents of parents who've lost children to addiction.
Yeah.
But, you know, group, I know like Bree was already on Facebook or liked, like Rise Together and mm-hmm. some of the other groups before I even knew they mm-hmm. existed. Social media can be very helpful right now. And so, you know, I'd encourage anybody to join a Facebook group if you're struggling with addiction or if you know somebody who is, to just share and to just vent and to ask questions and find out what kind of things are out there that you may not have tried. But there are a lot of great resources.
And I think part of that process is, too, is, you know, finding those networks that work for you, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
Traditional support group, non-traditional support group, what works for you, all pathways to recovery type conversation. I know even for myself, you know, there's been moments where I was really dived into Celebrate Recovery, you know. Mm-hmm. And I know there's been points that I really liked Smart Recovery. And there's been points where I looked at holistic approaches to recovery and physical fitness, and also looked at self-directed programs of spirituality and help to just really develop and sustain my recovery. And that is always going to be constantly changing. Mm-hmm. And I think part of the barrier that we have in today's world is that people don't know there's options.
Mm-hmm.
And we live in a world of options. But if we only give somebody one option, sometimes those options don't work for that person.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is important to share what does work for you. So for anybody that is out there listening too, find those online support groups are great. United We Can, I know, is also a group for parents.
Mm-hmm.
The Red Balloon Group is a great group. There's other groups that we'll mention in the show notes as well. And we'll have direct links to some of those resources, even to the local support groups. But also on top of that, it is a time of advocacy and a time of momentum. So, you know, engaging with recovery advocacy organizations or grassroots organizations can help feel like you're a part of something and where you can share your story, your son's story, your daughter's story, your loved one's story, and you can see it making a difference in today's world, which is absolutely needed, even if sharing that story is just online. I know anybody out there listening, over this next year, we're going to be sharing a lot of stories from the local community via online, you know, and this will probably be one of them, not just through the podcast, but people love to go to Facebook or Instagram or whatever the case may be. So for those people, sharing your story also helps you to recover in your own way, right?
Mm-hmm.
And for you, I know you reached out to me. It was like, want to get involved in like upcoming activities. And since it's the holiday season, you know, it's a little slow. But I thought that was pretty awesome because we have things coming up in the spring. You know, you do have local rallies. Heron Task Force groups are starting to regenerate themselves mm-hmm. in Winnebago County, Outagamie County, where you can sit in as a public member, as a constituent to your local community and voice your experience. And voice your opinion and what matters and what would have supported your family absolutely needs to be heard. I look through this lens as maybe a long campaigner. I'll preface that, like I've been on the road for 3 years, but I think in part because there is somewhat of a desensitized attitude around the fact that we're losing our loved ones to addiction.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's now, it's like, well, and I haven't necessarily heard somebody say this, but it's kind of the feeling it gets, like, well, it was only three people. You know, it wasn't eight, like it was a couple weeks ago. Like I know over, when we talked to Bev Kelly Miller, which I know is a friend of yours, we talked specifically about the eight people at that time that we lost within a 30-day period right in Appleton.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those people were from 15 all the way to 32 years old and were parents.
Mm-hmm.
And now you have some statistic that is out there, but those statistics are people, man.
Yeah.
Like they have these stories. Each and every family could share that similar experience, and it's time that we do unite. So finding each other online is absolutely crucial. So what have you found? Know that you have continued to like reach out, like becoming more of an advocate voice. I mean, it shows just even in your writing of the obituary.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was a lot of it, even just talking with other people because of the obituary in the paper and even online. We had people reaching out from Arizona, like all over the states, that didn't know us at all but just thanked us for sharing our story. And I've had people at work reach out to me and say, mm-hmm. You know, my family member has also been struggling with addiction, and I haven't shared this with anybody. Thank you for doing that and then having that conversation with them. So I think that that part is huge, just the being open about it and not trying to hide it. I mean, it's not a secret. It's
No, I love that, because in our world, silence does equal death. You know, that is a reality of the situation that we live in today. And you're helping to break that silence.
Right, and making your voice heard. I know when Zach first wanted to go to treatment and he found out that it was going to be a two-week wait, I remember, Bree, you wrote a letter to the hospital just kind of saying, you know, from a sister's standpoint, I can't believe this. My brother was ready. He's been, you know, addicted all these years, and now he's finally ready, and you told him 2 weeks. You know, just hearing from a family perspective of, that's not okay. Our system is broken if we make somebody who's that sick and ready for treatment wait 2 weeks.
Absolutely. And some wait longer.
Well, right. Yeah, that was, and that was with insurance.
With insurance. And there's many that don't have insurance or don't have the funding, like you said before. It is a funding issue. How do you support individuals that are struggling? And probably, like most individuals that struggle with addiction at that point, they don't have the financial resources to get into treatment or care. And I think that's why we have to look at even continued peer support, you know, and starting to have individuals that can directly engage with that person. So during those times where they don't have direct services provided to them through treatment, they can work with a peer support specialist, a recovery coach, or even get connected with local support groups and continue to have a mentorship that can guide them to the support that they can not only use, but also need in some senses before treatment or even after treatment, right? Like, how many times have you heard individuals that are coming out of treatment, well, what's next? Like, this 28 days, if you're lucky, if you got that long of a service, or maybe you're doing a 30 to 90 day program, like, now what? What about my job? What about school? What about the relationship that I am? What about, you know, how do I get rid of these financial qualms? Or
and what about not being able to communicate with 15 of my friends who still use, and now I have to find a whole new friend group? What other disease where you come out of treatment do you have to say, I'm sorry, I can't be around you anymore? That's a huge challenge to somebody with an addiction who has to change their friend group. I think we kind of forget that. We're, you know, and it's important to sometimes change those friend groups and set those boundaries, but it's an additional part of the treatment that other diseases don't have to encounter. So, you know, that's why maybe you need to befriend somebody who's just coming out of treatment, because guess what? They might need some new friends.
Absolutely. I know there was a period in my early stages of recovery when I started 8 years ago that I did have a really hard time when I felt like I had all these really great friends. I had to, unfortunately, cut ties from a lot of them, and a lot of those individuals were family members, whether it would be my parents or like my cousins or people that I grew up with for over the last, like, you know, obviously my parents the whole time, but I mean, you know, some family members, you know, long-term relationships. And now it was like, well, I've made this decision in my life to take care of me, and I'm going to put the work into it, and I have to do what's necessary to make sure that I'm able to survive. But being able to say that is one thing, and going through it is something completely different. So just to recap, what you're saying is that part of it is sharing your story and sharing it vocally, whether that is through an obituary or writing a letter and voicing your opinions and concerns with a loved one struggling with addiction, or to somebody that you have lost due to addiction. Sharing that story, like, don't be silent, because it could help somebody next to you or someone in your community. It is kind of the first step in part. It's like asking for help for the very first time. You're voicing, you're being heard, and that needs to continue. And then on top of that, look for support groups and individuals that will support you throughout your loss or throughout your struggle, right? So whether that would be online or in your community, it could be from a church, it could be from your support group, it could be from a siblings group or a parent group, it could be, you know, just a person that you connect with that has gone through a similar situation. And then on top of that, you know, look for additional resources. If you are struggling, it is okay to ask for help. Am I correct?
Oh, you know? Most definitely.
Most definitely. And I think without, I don't know how to reference it, but without a doubt, for me, and I know for you, and I know for many other people, if it wasn't for my faith, I wouldn't be standing strong here today. And people have different opinions about religion and faith, but to believe in something, to believe that you have a purpose and that you can be loved and cared for and heard, and that you can live in hope and walk by faith and not necessarily by sight, mm-hmm. can drive you through the darker corners of life. Mm-hmm. So find, you know, that faith and that spirituality in your own life and whatever that means to you. I live that every day. I have Pray First tattooed on my hands, and I pray every morning, I pray every night, I pray throughout the day. I just ask him for guidance, ask him for support. And I've been on my knees even recently begging for that help, because sometimes we don't have all the answers. We can say a lot of things in this room of what could change the future. But I think when people start talking about connection, love, and compassion, you cannot help but to think about spirituality and think about faith. And if we need community connection, and if I see, even looking at it from a youth standpoint, mm-hmm. people that just want to be accepted, they don't want to be judged, and they're holding on to that shame and guilt because they're afraid of what other people will think of them. Mm-hmm. In today's world, that is reality. And it might not be for everybody, but it's for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. So again, I want to thank you guys from the bottom of my heart. Is there anything that we would like to bring up before we get finished with this interview? I mean, you got to think, just for reference, this is the end of the year. This is the holiday season. This episode will actually play right around Christmas. And it is not coincidental, I don't think, that it is playing around Christmas, since we are talking about faith as well. And there's also a great need around the holidays. I truly believe when you take a look at the fact that suicide rates go up, substance abuse, substance use goes up, stress levels go up quite a bit around this time of year. Yeah. We have to give others support. You know, this is also a time of giving. It's a time of supporting efforts and causes and missions and things that are going on in your own backyard to support our youth, our families, our community. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that you guys would like to say?
Well, I would just echo that sentiment of, with the Christmas season comes the concept of giving, and whether that means giving financially to a group that you know is working to help those in struggling with addiction and recovery, or, you know, a mental health group that you can attach to. But something just as simple as befriending somebody mm-hmm. who's in recovery or struggling with addiction, because, like I said, oftentimes they have to abandon some of those previous friendships. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe it's something as simple as inviting somebody over for a Christmas meal because their family is fractured and they're not going to be going to their family's home for Christmas. For us, you know, we'll have the empty chair this mm-hmm. year at Christmas, and it's a very sad thing, and I know we're going to have a tough time this Christmas. It'll be bittersweet, though, as we share fun memories of Zach. Zach loved Christmas. Yeah. He was like a little kid at Christmas, right? He would start talking about it in October.
Yeah. What are you going to get me?
So he loved Christmas. But you know, a lot of people will be struggling like we are this year mm-hmm. with, you know, and whether you lost your family member to the disease of addiction or any other disease, it's a tough time. But again, the faith, you know, for us, it really is about the faith of, you know, what our eternity is going to look like. And I guess I would just invite anybody, you know, you'll have our contact information on there, anybody who just needs somebody to talk to. We can't claim that we'll understand exactly what they're feeling, because everybody goes through things differently. But we certainly have a better idea now than we ever did, right, after going through with Zach, with his experiences and then his loss.
I think that maybe the thing to do would be to just listen for somebody who needs some support, mm-hmm. taking the time. Mm-hmm. I think that's our biggest enemy is time. It always is, especially during the holidays. And it's a time to be together. But then when you do get together and somebody has something to say, especially something that has to do with addiction, recovery, or maybe just feeling the loss that they've had, take the time to just listen to that person. Mm-hmm. You don't even have to respond. I mean, give them the time. Mm-hmm. Let them talk. And I think that's one of the big things. But I'd also like to just, you know, say hi to Zach because I think he's listening. So is Grandpa. I think they're both up there, you know,
with
together.
Big smiles on their face.
I know we're going to have an empty chair, and that's hard for all of us. But we also need to remember the three seats that Zach's filling because of the organ donation, too. So there's three other families that won't have an empty chair because of him.
That it's all been successful. We haven't really heard anything that hasn't been. And I think if there would have been something that hadn't worked, we would have heard. At some point, the people that the recipients do have a chance to write to us, and I hope they do. You know, it's kind of neat knowing that part of Zach is out there living.
His heart is in Tennessee.
Yeah.
Walking in Memphis, right? Yeah, his heart is in Tennessee, and his kidneys are helping two other people.
I feel bad for the people who got his kidneys, because he always had kidney stones. And I'm hoping they don't have that. I hope that was just something in his body chemistry, or maybe something in his diet or whatever.
It's from all the Eggs Benedict.
Yeah. From all the Eggs Benedict and prime rib.
That's beautiful, guys. I love it today. I needed it more than you guys probably even realize. Just the smiles on your face and the strength that you carry, and the courage and the ability to be brave, the ability to hold your faith in strength and to continue to unite as a family and in part unite your community. Thank you.
Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
I could not believe that when I got the call that you guys actually wanted to come in as soon as you did to share Zach's story. And I truly believe he does have a smile on his face right now. And you know, he has helped to fill three seats. And that's a beautiful way to look at it. Mm-hmm. And his voice is still being shared, and his story still does matter. Mm-hmm. So thank you guys for all the support, not only for this effort, but just for the people that you've been supporting that have been reaching out to you. Mm-hmm. And remember to take some downtime for yourself. And, you know, healers need healing too. We need to take care of ourselves so we can take care of others. And with that being said, continue to, you know, find your support. And if you ever have any questions or want to get connected, continue to connect with us. We would love to continue to work together, even in this effort. Somebody reaches out to you and wants to share their story, we would love to have them on the show too. We know that is very important. But during a time of togetherness, a time of celebration, the holiday season is beautiful in its own little way. And it's also struggling in its own little way. It's a struggle in its own little way. But when we really get down to it, family is what it is important. Spending time with our loved ones. So find a unique way to hang out with Zach, you know, during the holiday season. Mm-hmm. You can still do that. Outside of that, for everybody else that's out there listening, thank you for staying on today's episode as we talk to a family that just recently lost their son, Zach, to addiction, the disease of addiction. Yes, he was cited for an overdose, and it was heroin-related. But ultimately, this individual struggled with the disease of addiction like millions and millions of Americans do today. And the family is in here today to show that you can continue to not only give a voice to the voiceless, but recover as a family. Mm-hmm. And with that, you can continue to provide hope to our community. Thank you guys so much for being here.
Thank you. Thank you. And Merry Christmas.
Yes, Merry Christmas. Thank you.
Merry Christmas.
From wherever you've been, come broken hearted, let rescue begin. Come find your mercy, oh sinner, come kneel. Earth has no sorrow.
Hey, what's going on, guys? This is Anthony Alvarado from Rise and Grind Recovery Radio, and I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for listening to this week's episode with the Roselle family. It is a holiday week. Christmas is coming up, and we are so happy to have the support from each and every one of you this year. I know this interview during this week was a little difficult. I'm going to be honest. You know, being a parent of two children and having a family in the studio with us, sharing probably one of their biggest fears, but still giving a voice to their son, Zach, in hopes that it would help make a difference to somebody that is out there listening today. And this family lost their son just back in October, and I can't thank them enough for having the courage and the ability to be brave, to be in the studio with us and share their story, share their son's story, and ultimately even help make a difference in my life. I know even I've been struggling, and a lot of people have been struggling out there just trying to maintain and find hope in our community. And the Roselle family definitely brought hope back into my life. I just want to thank you guys so much. We're also going to have Nadine speak and Douglas Darby speak from Rise Together, just to thank each and every one of you for an amazing year. Nadine, if you want to go ahead and give a shout out to the audience, that'd be awesome.
Sure, absolutely. Hey guys, this is Nadine Moscovich here, Program Manager of Rise Together. I, first of all, as well, just wanted to give a huge thanks to the Roselle family for having the courage to come on here and be completely open and vulnerable of sharing their story, and also to everybody else there that is out there who is sharing their stories and giving a voice back to the voiceless. Especially during the time of the holidays, I know a lot of us do have, you know, a little bit more of a difficult time when the people that we have lost are not here sitting at the dinner table with us or are not here during this time of the year. It can be difficult and challenging. I know for myself, I lost my brother-in-law a year ago at this time. But I do know that I am super grateful for the family that we do have around and the friends and the support, and to all of you guys out there who have continuously supported Rise Together and our efforts. We know that we could not do this without you. So to that, Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays.
All right. Thank you so much, Nadine. And we got Douglas Darby in the studio as well. How are you doing?
Perfect. You know, I just wanted to put a big condolences out to the Roselle family. Thank you so much for being on the show. Our thoughts and prayers are with you always, but especially during the holidays. And I think I just wanted to kind of lead into that. I know the holidays are extremely rough for a lot of people. I know for myself, just a few days ago, I was already exhausted just at that point of we're getting into the winter, the holidays are coming up, and then you're supposed to put this smile and this cheer on your face, and I know how tough that is sometimes to do. And I am trying to buy into it just as much as anyone else. And it is tough, and I just want people to know that the love, the support is out there throughout the holidays. People are thinking about you. People are caring. And sometimes you have to reach out that hand for just a little bit extra support. It's not always just smiles and gathering around the table for family holidays. Sometimes it's a little bit more deeper than that, and some people just frankly don't have those holiday tables to surround. So let's keep a warm thank you out to them. And just know that none of us are truly alone on Christmas. And let's look forward to a great new year, a great start to a new season, a new beginning. And that's what it's been about. I know that's the way that I'm approaching this this holiday season. I'm putting my best foot forward and really trying to embrace new family traditions in my own household. And I strongly, strongly recommend that all the listeners, all the supporters out there, do the same, and happy holidays, Paul.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for being in the studio today, and thank you to all of our listeners once again. Happy holidays and Merry Christmas. Please feel free to check out any of the previous episodes from the last couple months. You just go to weallrisetogether.org. Again, that's weallrisetogether.org. Thank you so much. Much love.
Thank you.